Welcome everyone into the B Section podcast, brought to you by the Morning Times and the Daily Review. I'm Kirk Loveson, joined as always by Logan Hill and David Goff. We got some big news to talk about, maybe the biggest ever in Bradford County as far as football goes. But before we do any of that on this episode, Logan, tell us about our sponsor.
Today's podcast is being brought to you by the Jolly Farmer Convenience Store. When you think about convenience, think about the Jolly Farmer in Waverly. From the supersized selection of microbrewery beers to the bakery and grocery items, lottery tickets, and even that pick-me-up cup of coffee, they have it all for you. Visit the Jolly Farmer, 7 Elizabeth Street in Waverly. It's open 7 days a week. If it was open 8, maybe David could get there.
Bradford County, the NTL, has its first state champion football team. It is Troy, the 2A state champs. They defeat Central Clarion 25-24. David and Logan were both in the house. They got a lot to talk about, a lot to tell us about. We're not going to waste any time. Troy, 2A state champs. Logan, dive into this for us.
Just a culmination for this Troy Trojans football team. And I'm not going to, I think I'd be remiss to not mention the nickname I've heard for the NTL in the 2 years I've been here. And coaches will tell you it. Fans will tell you they've heard it. The No Talent League. They've heard it. Well, in 2024, Troy took that and said, nope, not true anymore. They go and they win one of the best football games I've ever covered. And yeah. I'm not just speaking because Troy won that game and it was more fun for us to put the stories together that night. But 25-24 over Central Clarion, back and forth, lead changes. It had everything that you could have. I'm pulling up the stats right now, but like you said, David was there also. We had different perspectives. So,
I was about to say, David, tell us a little bit about your perspective and where you were at and how you viewed the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Logan was down the Troy sideline following pretty much the line of scrimmage the entire day, I would assume. I was up in the press box, so I got a whole bird's eye view of it. And, so it was actually kind of funny because I had a spot on the second row of press row where there's a wall next to me, so I couldn't see 30 yard line to the goal line on the one side. So I had to like move to the corner, the other corner, and stand and just watch it there. But anyway, I mean, it, like Logan was saying, first, not only was it a great, great competitive football game, it was the state championship, and it was 25-24. There was a last-second desperate field goal to try to win it for Clarion that was missed. Whenever a game goes down to a field goal attempt, you know it's good. And then, I mean, you talk about the drive that Troy had to get down and take the lead late. It was, what, 12 plays, 78 yards, 5.5 minutes, starting with 6.5 minutes left, something like that. And then you have the play, the halfback toss pass play. The
Trojans halfback toss.
Yeah.
I don't know what the official name in the playbook is for it, but it's tried and true.
But I mean, that play is going to go down in history because Evan Ward tosses the ball right to Mason Smith. Smith goes toward the right side, puts his arm up like he's about to throw, doesn't find an open receiver. And then all of a sudden, he veers to his left, keeps going to his left, breaks, gets toward the left pylon, barely gets in the end zone. They get the touchdown to tie the game 24-24 with 1:15 left. And then I don't remember the kicker's name.
Gavin Lycan-Leffler.
Hits the extra point. It's 25-24 Troy. I mean, I've never, in the moment, as that drive was going on, I'm thinking, wow, this is going really well. This is the perfect kind of drive you would want for Troy. And they finish it off. I've never seen such a more impressive drive in high school in my life.
What was the tension like on the sideline? Once we got into this, this coming down to the last minute type of situation.
So I didn't really feel it. Championship was different all season. I'm on the sidelines with Troy. I'm able to walk up and down pretty freely, stand where I need to stand. Don't get in their way by any stretch or any imagination. But if I need to stand at the 50 to watch something that's happening at the 50, I can. State championship, if you were media and you weren't with the team, you had to play 30-30, basically. You had to be outside of the white box. So I was off to the side a little bit, not maybe close to the hearing everything and all that, but it didn't really feel like a tension. I'll tell you from my perspective, the first two quarters, Troy gets the ball first. They fumble the opening kickoff, and in your mind, you're like, uh-oh, what's Central Clarion going to do with this? Troy's able to hold him to a field goal.
There was a massive holding call that got them. Clarion got within inside the 1 yard line, and there was a holding call that brought them back.
Yeah, pulled it back from what would have been a touchdown. Yeah. Took it off the board, and they had to settle for 3. So then Troy responds, and they go get a touchdown. Extra point was no good. So it's 6-3, and you're like, okay, first quarter is waning down. We got a ball game here. Troy gets an onside kick. It goes in and out of the hands of the Central Clarion kick returner, not deep, but in the middle of the pack, kind of. And Jack Burbage is able to fall on it. Troy's coming back out on offense. They go down. They score again. They go for two, don't get it, but it's 12-3. 9 points, two scores. And that's the way it goes to halftime. They did a really good job defensively of holding Jace Ferguson, who had seven touchdowns against South Park the week prior, in check in the first half. He didn't really do a whole lot. There was a play late in that first half where...
Yeah, Brendan, like a 40-yard run, something like that.
He had a 38-yard run, but before that, or around that same time, Brendan Gilliland came off the edge as a rusher and looked like it was a strip sack fumble. They called
They
called it incomplete.
I totally forgot about that.
I've watched it three or four times. In replays now, it looked like a strip sack fumble to me. That would have just been even more. I think Clarion fell on it, but that would have just been even more momentum. But
yeah,
Troy goes into the locker room 12-3. You're like, okay, they're probably exactly where they want to be. If they, you said you played two quarters in the state championship, you have a lead. Then, as the third quarter played out, in my mind, it's did their offense come back out with them? Because Clarion goes down the field with the passing game. They tried to go to the running game in the first half. Passing game was lighting up Troy's defense. They went down the field and scored. It was 12-9.
They completed about seven passes in a row there. And they didn't really... They passed maybe all of three or four times in the first half total.
So then Troy pretty much goes three and out, gives it right back to Clarion. They go down and score again. It's 16-12. You're like, uh-oh. Momentum has switched sidelines. Old Mo has switched sidelines. From there, Troy's able to respond. Gilliland rips off a 28-yard touchdown to take the lead back. It's 18-16. They went for two. And I believe it was that possession. They went for two, and they didn't get it. And you're kind of wondering, what was the reasoning for going for two there? The way the game ended up playing out, you don't even ask coach about that by the by the game's final. But they, I guess, went to try to go up by four, make it a touch, make the other team have to get a touchdown. Well, it doesn't matter. Clarion goes down the field again, gets a rushing touchdown from Ferguson to take the lead back. And then, like we said, Troy needed that drive. They go and they get it, and they just, like clockwork, 3 yards, 4 yards, got 5 yards this time, and 2 yards.
The way the game was playing, you knew that Troy was unlikely to break out like a 40, 50-yard play like they've been able to all season. So the fact that they were able to do, with 6 minutes left, you needed to score a long touchdown drive, and they did it perfectly. They executed it perfectly.
It was to the point where I was standing down there on the sideline, and I looked at someone next to me, and I go, when does Clarion think about calling a timeout? Mm-hmm. Troy scores the what ended up being the winning touchdown with a minute 15 to play. So you're like, okay. They get the extra point. They're up by one. And Clarion breaks off a big return on the ensuing kickoff, and you're like, uh-oh.
I thought immediately of the Waverly Forks game, where Waverly had that last-minute touchdown to take the lead, and then Forks had that big return. Like, I'm like, oh, no, this is not happening again.
Ferguson up the left sideline, and you're like,
Field position's going to do it,
But then Troy's defense, they just held again. I think they got a sack.
They got a sack on the first play.
They made a tackle for no gain, and they had Clarion to 4th-and-13. They were able to convert it, but you're looking at 28 seconds, one timeout maybe, and so they took a couple of shots towards the end zone. Lincoln Kimmicks got his late redemption for his early slip-up, I guess you would say, because he got a hand on one of the deep ball attempts to break it up as a DB, so... And he also had earlier in the game a fake punt that was converted that comes back on a legal man in the backfield or something like that. So you're like, okay, well, you can't run the fake punt now because you just played that card. Gets a pass breakup, and Clarion decides, hey, we're going to try to kick it. And 50 yards in a win like that in a cold weather day. It was snowing during parts of the game.
The Central Clarion's decision of all decisions for their history of the rest of their program, this will always be remembered as the decision.
I was up in the press box. I was sitting behind like two radio broadcasts that were Central Clarion based, and they were like, it looks like they're going to try to kick the ball. So they were pretty surprised by it, although they were also saying throughout the game that like their kicker, supposedly one of the best in the state, but you're talking about a high school kicker trying to kick a 50-yarder into the wind in a pressure situation. It's a tough call. But that's all the credit in the world for Troy to, you know, give up that return. It just tells you the character of the Troy team to give up that return and then
force them
into that kind of decision where Central Clarion is kind of in a lose-lose situation with, 5 seconds left. So
just some final stats from that game. Brendan Gilliland goes for 25 carries, 143 yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, catches a 20-yard receiving touchdown. On 4th-and-12, we should probably add.
I was going to say, that might be the most underrated play of the entire day.
That was Woodward's only completion that day for a positive gain, and it went for a 20-yard touchdown in a much-needed spot early in that second quarter. Evan Woodward finished with 13 carries, 62 yards, Mason Smith, 9 carries, 43 yards. And Cale Millard at fullback. He had 6 runs of his own, 18 yards. None for loss, all for gain. And then Gilliland had the big catch. And PIAA, we were talking about it before we sat down today. Looks like they kept some defensive stats, too.
They did. Okay.
Jack Burbage leads in the game with 8 tackles. Their middle linebacker does what he did all season. He was their leading tackler. One of 2 guys over 100 on the year coming into the game, along with Noah Ellis, other middle linebacker for them. Joseph Fry had 6 tackles. Mason Smith had 6 tackles, and Reed Palmer had 6 tackles down on the D-line. So, really, I mean, you win a game by 1 point to finish off an undefeated season. Everybody's going to contribute. A
lot of contributions.
And everybody did, and it was just a... I use culmination at the top. That's really what it was. This Troy team fell in the district final last year to Southern Columbia, who went on to win a 7th straight state title, and Coach Jim Smith said that they will be back in this game next year. Every week it felt like they were just marching towards that point, and then it got there and they blew it out of the water, and then they just kept on going.
Yeah, an incredible story. You both did a tremendous job covering it all season long. And like you said, culmination is the word of the day here and of this podcast, because we could sit here for the next 2 hours and talk about what a moment this was, not just for the Trojans, but for Bradford County football, for the NTL football. The biggest of congratulations go out to the Troy football team in their 2A state championship.
I just think it's cool, too. So, like, obviously, Troy crushed their competition all season long. They're winning by 40, 50 points. And here in the championship game, where they weren't really tested all season long except for week 2 in Delaware. And it's not only does the Troy community get to celebrate a state championship and, like, yeah, they get to look back 20, 30 years down the road about this incredible season that they had, but they got to do it in this sort of legendary football game where there's 5 lead changes. There's so much to talk about from this game that people will remember forever.
Yeah. What about from a reporter standpoint, Logan? For you, this was, speaking of stories and a path, this was a 2-year process for you as well, covering this football team, where you saw them come up short and then make a return. What was that like, just from your own perspective? Obviously, this is all about the team and the accomplishment for Troy football, but we are sitting here at this table. We've talked about this team a lot over the last 2 years, and you were there for the majority of it. What was this like for you?
For sure. I mean, I show up in April of 2023. It's before football season, right? And you get to the year, and it's like, oh, this Troy team might be really good. You hear it, right? Maybe. I don't remember what week I first covered them last season, but you just watch them do what they do to their opponents, and then coming into that old shoe, I remember last year they ended up winning, I think the final score was 51-0, and it's just they could not be stopped in that game, and that's their most storied rival in Canton, right? So obviously it was programs going in different directions, whereas Canton was down on numbers this year. Their ascension sounds like I just missed it by a couple of years, whereas this was Troy's peak, but they breezed through the playoffs, and then you hear they're playing Southern Columbia, and I'm not from Pennsylvania. I'm not from this area. And everybody's like, oh, they're playing Southern Columbia.
Big roadblock.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this team has won 6 straight state titles. I said, 6? So then, of course, that game, well, Troy's done all their work. They're the 1 seed. It's going to be played at Alperon Park. You think it favors them. Southern Columbia's got to come play there. It's a monsoon. It's one of the hardest rainstorms I've ever covered a game in. We talked about before we sat down today, you and I, Kirk and David, about how we log our games on pen and paper or pencil and paper.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that night. I was doing it on my phone with an umbrella over my shoulder and my camera in my hand. That game was just, and it was 14-0. Southern Columbia, the Tigers found the brakes that night and they kept going and they won another title. So most of that Troy group comes back. Obviously you lose some seniors, but just, you had a goal, right? And that was the cool part too. And you talk to some of the players afterward is like, look, this didn't start at heat camp in July. This started the day after that game when we got back to the weight room and we really went after it and we had a goal in mind. So really, and obviously he's the quarterback. So Evan Woodward, just one of the most humble, nice to talk to athletes I've had a chance to work and cover since I've been up here. And I asked him, he was the first one to raise the trophy on Friday when they win the title. He says, I don't know why they handed it to me. I didn't win this. We won this. And that's you get that feeling coming out of a lot of teams
great
around this area.
Yeah.
But this Troy was a team with one goal. And you could say it about anybody. You could have said it about Tioga last year. Could have said it about Waverly last year, both teams that captured New York state titles. But that's just what you felt. And you would have guys that would go for big plays or crazy numbers, but it was never about them. It was, hey, we've wanted this since we were little kids. And we're here, and the moment is now. So really just a storybook, and when you take a step back, the perspective of it, like, look, driving to Mansfield University for a couple of games, to Lock Haven another. Those are long nights, hour and a half each way, but I get to stand on the sideline and watch this team come together and conquer and do great things. And Coach Jim Smith said it in the moment, and I'm sure it'll be echoed, and hopefully other teams around the league and around Bradford County feel this way too, is this wasn't just a win for Troy. This was a win for the Northern Tier League, because that team up north, those guys up north, they're small schools. They're not going to – they can't hang with us Philly area schools, with us Pittsburgh area school, even Harrisburg area. They can't – they're not big enough. They can't hang with us, and they went out and did it. And when they needed to, David talked about it at the top, when they needed a drive, it was, hey, one drive for the rest of your life. They figured it out, and they did what they did best. So
I asked Jim Smith after the game, I was like, when did you have the idea that this group, and specifically this group, could do this kind of thing? And he mentioned right before Logan got up, the season before Logan got up here to cover Troy last year, is that in the old shoe game against Canton in 2022, that was the second straight year that Canton would end up at a state semifinal game. But Troy, with young talent, like all the guys on that field on Friday, we're freshmen and sophomores in that old shoe game in 2022. They kept it close with Canton late. They lost that game 28-14. But Jim Smith said, like, when I knew when they were competitive with them, Canton that night, he called Canton a tremendous team, that we might be able to do something here if we're hanging in with these guys when we're this young. And they just built and built and built to last Friday.
Well, we're certainly fortunate in the fact that we started this podcast a year ago, and in 2 years' time, we've had three state football championships. And again, Logan, you mentioned it, and I know David feels the same. It's a pretty fortunate thing we get to do and call it work. But Troy gave us another good one this year. So once again, the biggest of congratulations go out to the Troy Trojans football team on their 2A state championship victory over Central Clarion. They win 25-24, and they are forever state champs. With that said,
real quick before we turn to, I'm trying to think out loud right now. So David, you've had some sort of state champion in every season so far since you've been up here, because you started last fall, right?
Yeah.
So that was two championships then. Did winner was wrestling.
Waverly. Yeah.
Tioga wins in wrestling. Waverly had a state champ in wrestling in the spring. It was track, right?
I was trying to think what happened in the spring.
The track team won.
Yeah,
right?
Waverly Ralph Johnson won the 200, and then the relay team their relay team on the 4x100 in the state. So
I hope you like the Sarah area, because I don't think they're ever like
it's been good to you for sure. With that said, it's time to transition to winter sports. We are only about 2 weeks in,
it's only December. Yeah,
we're in 12th at the time. The infancy of the season, and we didn't get to much last week due to the state championship and everything that was going on with that. But let's, you guys dive in a little bit here with a recap of what you've been seeing out there and what you've covered and what we can expect this winter sports season. I started with Logan on Troy. David, let me start with you. What do you got in terms of just been what's going on over the last couple of weeks with winter sports?
Sorry, my thought process went differently now. I'm thinking of the state championships. I also got to cover North Carolina. So I've been lucky having covered a baseball state championship and volleyball. Anyway.
You got a horseshoe in your pocket?
So obviously basketball is on the way. Wrestling is on the way now. It was at Sarah girls basketball. They played Sullivan County the other night, and it was Sarah's home opener, and it was also their first win in two seasons. They had an 0-22 season last year. I think it was about a 25 game losing streak in total. Obviously just their numbers have been low, and it's been a tough time for them. But they go out and they beat Sullivan Colony 33-24. They're down 8-4 after the first quarter, and then go on a 14-3 run in the second quarter to take a nice 18-11 lead that they were able to hold on to the rest of the way. And Abby McGoffey and Elizabeth Hunter, I can't remember which one had which, but they were like 12 and 11 points. Also, and Riley Lance had 10 points. So actually three players scored all 33 points for Sarah, but those three girls finally were able to get Sarah on the winning side. And as you can imagine, they are pretty thrilled about that night to finally get that feeling back. Because there were a couple times last year where they were close in the fourth quarter to finally getting that win, and it just
never made it over the hump.
Snowball. Yeah. And I know there was the one loss. They lost the game to Kalinowski Valley in the last week of last year, where it was like it was a winnable game going into it, and they knew it. And they had a lead in the fourth quarter, and it just went. You could see how emotional they were that they just couldn't get it done. The fact that they were able to get a win already early this season. Just, it was a good thing to see Sarah be able to do that. The next night, I was back at Sarah for Sarah boys basketball against Towanda. Towanda would end up winning that 46-42. Pretty close back and forth game all season, all game. Turnovers were kind of ultimately the downfall for Sarah, and Towanda was able to hit like three or four big three-pointers down the stretch in the fourth quarter to kind of take command of that game. And then last night on Wednesday, Tioga Wrestling faced Groton for their first dual meet of the season. And it was not much to write about because there were only three of the 13 weight classes.
Forfeits, right?
There are three actual matches, and Tioga won all of those, but it was 65-12 Tioga win. It's the very, very beginning of them trying to win a four straight dual meet state championship and what would be a six straight individual state championship as a team. So you would expect big things from Tioga this year. They're returning four top four state guys from last year. So
off to a good start. Yeah. Logan, give us your recap of winter sports. I know you've been tied up in some of the Troy stuff, but what do you got for us over the last couple weeks here?
A lot of hoops so far. I haven't hit the wrestling mats yet, just the way things have worked out. But Wailusin girls basketball late last week, I want to say it was Wednesday night, they played a good one against Delaware Valley. It came down to the closing moments. Delaware Valley's a 6A school, so to play a good competitive nod. They played Waverly, I believe, first game of the year a couple weeks back. David was there for that one. So you're playing some schools that have some juice to them, that are some maybe bigger size schools, have more players to choose from when you come into a season as a smaller school in Wailusin. And it's off to a good start. You learn things about your team, and hopefully you go from there. They won the other night over Shamokin, I believe. I wasn't there for that one. But I also had Canton and Wailusin boys on Monday night, or Tuesday night, I'm sorry. That was a good one. It was 14-8 at halftime. So you're like, okay, maybe not. From a fans watching, shot-taking perspective, maybe not that much of a good one, but it really heated up in that third quarter. Both teams, Wailusin definitely on the younger side, graduated three senior guards last season that scored a lot of their points. So figuring out who's going to take over those roles, and Canton stormed back in the late third and fourth quarter to take a lead on their home court. They made some big free throws late. Talon Williams had 15 points in the game, 13 of them in the fourth quarter, so really came alive to help lead the charge. Other than that, tonight we're taping on Thursday. I'll be in Towanda tonight. First chance to see Towanda boys play. David already got to see him play Sarah earlier this week. Elsewhere, it's just it's heating up. There's been some swim meets going on. Oh, Saturday, that's the one I was trying to recall. Northeast Bradford girls basketball, saw them beat Blue Ridge. They get up and down the floor. They shoot shots. They had really good passing in that game. It's making the right pass, but it's also players being in the right spot. So that's a sort of veteran group. A lot of them came back, so you'd think that they could make some noise in their field of things this year. And then I actually got to cover my first game out at Mansfield University's basketball court.
Okay.
Towanda girls was playing Loyal Sock. Loyal Sock won that one going away, but a cool venue and a cool moment kind of to start off your year. So a lot of stuff's going on, and we're really rolling. Yep. Towanda Wrestling beat Horseheads the other night in their dual meet opener, 44-22. So that's a storied program. They got four guys that are all returning as seniors and all were captains last year as juniors, and they'll be captains again this year. Coach Bill Sexton has already reached out to me. We've been talking about the season. So Wailusin had their Rams duels over the weekend, and then Towanda Swimming has gotten a couple of meets already under their belt. So to say we're in full swing,
lots to unpack and plenty more to come, right?
That's what happens when you're trailing a football team that's playing into December, too.
I do want to give a quick note on Waverly girls basketball, because they are 3-0 to start of the year. They beat Seton Catholic 72-14 this week. They beat Horseheads, which is a bigger school, 53-42 earlier this week. And like we mentioned, they beat Wailusin at Wailusin to open the season about a week and a half ago. So they're just off to a strong start. And I think of all the Valley basketball teams, boys and girls, they seem to have the highest kind of expectations for this season.
Got it. So like we said, just getting started here in the winter season. Plenty more to come. Logan and David will have you covered this whole winter. Make sure you get a copy of the Daily Review in the Morning Times. And if you haven't, please subscribe, because we got a lot of action coming. Logan?
I'm just happy events are indoors.
Yes.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah, the cold is here. It's not going anywhere.
That was a nice thing for me personally at the state championship game, is while he was on the sideline freezing his butt off, I was on the press box.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll happily do it, but it is nice that we've reached the point where it's inside stuff.
Well, let's transition nationally before we do that one more time from the Jolly Farmer.
Today's podcast is being brought to you by the Jolly Farmer Convenience Store. When you think about convenience, think about the Jolly Farmer in Waverly. From the supersized selection of microbrewery beers to the bakery and grocery items, lottery tickets, and even that pick-me-up cup of coffee, they have it all for you. Visit the Jolly Farmer, 7 Elizabeth Street in Waverly. It's open 7 days a week.
Let's start with college football. The playoff bracket is official. It will not change anymore. There'll be no more previews in terms of who's going to get where, who's going to get what, who's going to get in. We have the bracket. David's wearing his Temple Owls Boca Raton Bowl.
New coach.
Well timed. Let's go right into it. Give me the bracket,
Logan. What seed do you want to start with, Kirk?
I want to start. Just give me the first round matchups.
Okay. We got number 5, Texas, at number 12, Clemson. Great ACC championship game, by the way. I don't know if you guys watched. I was able to watch that.
56-yarder. Night.
Clemson gets in.
Number 10, Indiana, at number 7, Notre Dame.
Battle of the matchup. State of Indiana.
That's cool.
Number 6, Penn State, hosting number 11, SMU.
Very interesting. Also, Penn State was in quite a game themselves against Oregon for the Big Ten championship.
And probably the game to watch in the first round matchups, number 9, Tennessee, going to number 8, Ohio State.
Yeah, that's easily probably the marquee.
It is a Saturday night game.
That's the marquee, I would say, the first round in terms of how they stack up on paper competitively. But tell me the 4 byes, please.
Oregon 1, Georgia 2, Boise State 3. And Arizona State 4. Arizona State whooped up in the Big 12 championship game, so they get a bye. Boise State just stayed the course, and they end up with a bye. Georgia won a good game over Texas, lost Carson Beck there for a little bit, and was still able to win it. An OT, I believe. I was watching on the way back from Mansfield University, or listening to it, I should say. And then Oregon hung on to beat Penn State in that game that I did not see that many points coming in.
No, it happened in a hurry.
I saw 31-24, and like I was probably late. Oh, halftime.
Yeah.
I think it was the most points ever scored in a Big Ten championship game. I could have that wrong.
It's probably true.
Let's give a winner. Does anyone have one right off the top? Because I got my winner.
Who is it?
Everyone, fire Ryan Day. How did they lose to Michigan again? The season is a wash. Who cares, since we couldn't finish off against our rival and it doesn't look like we will anytime soon. And yet it all comes back in the playoff and the Ohio State Buckeyes make a run and they win the national championship this year in the first ever 12-team playoff. I just think the story sets up that way. It seemed like a lost season when they fell against Michigan there in the final game. Everyone wants their coach fired. And then, you know, they're still in a good spot. They beat Tennessee. It kind of sets up well for them. They're talented enough. A lot of people predicted them before the season even started to be maybe a first four bye. I like the Buckeyes to right the ship here in the most important time of year and win the first ever 12-team playoff. David.
I absolutely see that happening. You mentioned that last week about how, because everyone was talking about how Ohio State is a disaster. I was like, well, they're still one of the best teams in the bracket. However, I will probably just pick Oregon. I think Oregon has enough to finally get it done.
No.
I look.
All that Nike money going to get it done, right?
But I don't know. This is such a
Favorite David. That's what we should call you. God. Favorite David.
It's just such a weird season, and I feel like they're going to benefit from the fact that Georgia may not have their real quarterback. Also, I think Oregon does have enough to beat Ohio State a second time, and I don't know. I know it's the number one seed and all that, but
I'm giving you a hard time. I can see Oregon doing the exact same thing.
They've answered every test so far. Yeah. So
for the sake of conversation, I think Georgia might have a good shot to do it. Their backup came in, a true freshman, and carried the load for them on offense when they needed to in that SEC championship game. So whether it's him, whether it's Carson Beck, I don't see any world where Carson Beck doesn't play. I don't believe it was to be a season-ending injury as far as I know.
Yeah.
But it could set up pretty nicely for them. They get the bye, and maybe they're playing Notre Dame. Maybe Indiana pulls off the upset in that game, theoretically, and then you're getting the winner of Penn State Boise in the next round, or if SMU it goes down to Penn State.
Penn State might be set up better than anyone else.
And that's been the topic of conversation, is they have the best path, so to speak, right? So they get SMU in the first round, and then that would lead them to Boise. Then you get Georgia/Notre Dame, a team that you think you could play with in any way, shape, or form. Do you guys have anything else? I was going to read the time slots of the first four-round game.
Give me the time.
So Notre Dame and Indiana is going to be that Friday night, the 20th. And that's an 8 o'clock game on ABC and ESPN. I believe it's the first game in Notre Dame to be broadcast by somebody other than NBC forever.
Since 1990.
Wow.
So I guess that's NBC crazy. Has a tight relationship with Notre Dame.
Yeah, NBC has broadcasted Notre Dame home games for maybe a century.
Yeah, and I know a lot of Notre Dame's games this season were like exclusively on Peacock. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Penn State getting the noon game on Saturday as they,
big noon
as
kickoff.
They love to see. Penn State SMU on TNT and Max.
Careful, Penn State. That's a scary game.
I think SMU's going to have
live,
some,
I think.
Well, and after how that one went in the ACC championship game, it should be a good one. 4 o'clock is going to be Texas and Clemson, Battle of the Oranges. That's on TNT and Max as well. And then finally, Tennessee and Ohio State on ABC, ESPN at 8 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
So I watched the selection show on the train from Philadelphia to Harrisburg on Sunday. And
you were on a train there?
Yeah. So I stayed with, I don't know, I was at the Big Five Classic triple header with my dad on Saturday. That's, for anyone who doesn't know, that's all six Philadelphia Division One college basketball teams that are playing each other.
I'm not being evil.
Yes.
Why did somebody get added?
Yeah. Okay. So Drexel did.
Okay.
Generally speaking, this could be a whole history lesson. I'm trying not.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I'm trying to. But generally speaking, the Big Five Philadelphia college basketball has always been my alma mater, Temple, Villanova, Penn, St. Joe's, and LaSalle. They've been a big time. It's been a big time thing in Philadelphia for 7-8 decades, whatever. And then they used to have Big Five championships between just those five teams, and it was always round robin. That's how they decided the champion. But it got a lot less. People started to care a lot less about it recently, so they made this Big Five triple header where there's the fifth place, third place, and championship game all one day at the Wells Fargo Center, and they needed the sixth team, and Drexel is the other team, so now they're part of the Big Five.
I'm with
you. But it's like the Big Ten and the Big 12 where there are not 12 and 10 teams.
That's true. So, that's true. I was just curious more because you said it was a triple header, and I'm like, well, if it's the Big Five, that makes sense.
Yeah, but anyway, the point is...
Another day, another podcast.
Yeah. So I was going to maybe do a Philly Minute about it just because it was a really fun day that day. But I stayed at a friend's house that night and then in Philly and then went back to my parents in Harrisburg on Sunday morning. And I was saying I watched the selection show while doing that. And while I was watching that, ESPN seemed pretty mad about the idea that all conference, the top four seeds all go to conference champions. I was really annoyed by they were like outwardly like, this is a terrible idea. Next year they have to have just the top four teams, period. I'm curious what you guys think, because I love the little quirk about it.
Well, if you do that, we start to lose significance of conference championships, right? What are you earning? What are you accomplishing after an entire season where you earn the right to play and potentially win your conference championship?
They earn the right to play.
The issue becomes, well, then you got to weigh conferences against each other versus some of these teams like a Notre Dame who doesn't play in a conference.
Well, and then the problem is it feels like you're placating to the big time marquee programs, right? Because the anger about it is that an Arizona State and a Boise State both get a bye, and it's not a Penn State or an Ohio State. But like you said, then what's the point of playing the championship game?
Yeah, you want to be in the conferences. We got people moving from conference to conference. This is the card you're going to get dealt. This is the way it's going to work out.
I just thought it was odd. Like I like Reese Davis. He had a lot of opinions to say during the selection show, and I thought that was odd as, like, who was supposed to be just the host who's announcing the bracket. And, like, it was very weird to me that ESPN, who has these huge contracts with the SEC and Big Ten, to be like, oh, no, it should just be, it absolutely has to be just the top four teams, period, next year instead of the top four conference champions. And that run me the wrong way. That's why I brought it up.
My thing is, as long as there is conferences, winning your conference has to mean something other than just putting the plaque on your wall when there is a playoff to advance to.
They also earned a bye because they played an extra game already. So it's nice to give them that bye for the playoff.
College football is always going to have a lot of conversation around it. What's getting remiss is, or being missed, is that last year it was 4. 10 years ago, it was 2. 2 teams went to play for the
Soon it'll be 16.
It's going to be 16 before you know it. So, like, this is a better alternative than what was around. So it's always going to be conversation. It's always going to be topic of conversation. I'm excited. All of the matchups sound like fun. Power to SMU to coming up to Happy Valley at this time of year because it's cold.
Baseball.
All right, take it away, Kirk.
Winter sports meetings. Juan Soto is no longer a Yankee. He is now a New York Met, so probably not changing his address. But I was going
to
say,
do you think you have to change apartments?
He's not changing his address, but he's changing teams in what was clearly a decision based around the highest bidder.
It was all money about for him.
All money for Juan Soto. He's now on, I believe, his fourth team by the age of 27 years old. He got paid a lot.
And now he's going to be the thorn in the Phillies side for 15 years.
No real moves yet from the Phillies.
No, not yet.
Yankees go and get Max Fried, former ace of the Atlanta Braves, adding a good left hand right behind Gerrit Cole for a nice 1-2 punch. Not much else really on the Yankees side of things that jumps out. Everybody's got a little bit here and a little bit there, but nothing big. The Orioles are...
Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, I was going to say Sanchez. Tyler O'Neill.
They're moving the wall in.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Good.
So they moved it back, and now they've decided that that's too far, so they're finding a happy medium, I guess.
Yeah, good. So winter meetings are taking place, which means free agents are signing. We're going to have some trades soon, and we'll keep you updated on our thoughts, at least.
On our thoughts, not updated on the news.
Not on the news. You'll all know that, but on our thoughts, certainly, as we go forward in the offseason. And with that said, we're going to end with the NFL, our locks. Logan and I went head-to-head on the Chiefs, Chargers.
I almost got you, too.
You lost by another Chiefs field goal.
A doink. Whoa, jinx, you and your coke.
David takes care of business again. So let's get right into it, and we'll get people out of here. David, start us off as you're still in the catbird seat.
I have no idea. Let's see here.
I think this is the week you lose one.
This is it, huh?
Too. Not to be evil again. No, I know. I think this is the week that it gets a little muddy.
I should have looked at this beforehand. So I'm sorry.
I'll start us off. Broncos over Colts. Broncos at home. Competitive game. Doesn't seem like an obvious lock, but both teams trying to keep their playoff hopes alive and get in. Anytime that's the case and you're playing against each other, I like to roll with the home team and the home crowd. So I think the Broncos get it done over the Colts. David?
Colts over Broncos.
Okay. I like another head-to-head.
I had the thought of going with that game. I had the thought of going with that game. And look, the Broncos have been good. They're 8-5.
You don't believe?
I don't believe just yet. I want to see them. If they win this game, it's the Colts, so it's not like a major game for them. But like, in my eyes, they have the ability to slip up. And the Colts are needing to get a win or two or three here. So,
all right,
I'll go with Colts and make this thing a little bit more interesting.
Sean Payton, Bo Nix is the next Sean Payton, Drew Brees. You heard it here first.
Okay.
Logan?
Give me the Vikings over the Bears.
That was my other one.
I like it.
Need a win here. Yeah. Three in the loss column. The Bears are kind of in a free fall for the rest of this season. Get rid of the coach and just play it out. The Vikings are playing some really good ball right now.
The Vikings are just cruising.
That's a Monday night or 8 o'clock. So the other games I looked at, it would have been fun to pick Eagles Steelers. They're playing in Philly. Lions Bills is another interesting one. There's a really good slate of games this week.
Lions Bills, maybe Super Bowl preview?
In your mind.
Yeah, I know.
Eagles Steelers Super Bowl preview?
Nah. Steelers won't get there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out more as we continue on. Thanks for listening to this episode. Once again, a huge congratulations to the Troy Trojans on their 2A state championship. And we are going to have you up to date and up to speed with all the coverage going into this winter sports season. Until then, get a copy of the Times, get a copy of the Daily Review, keep following us, and we'll see you back next week.